state support for education, and Senate Bill 431 relating to purchase of residential childcare services. How many people here are on 519? How many people here are on 431? Okay, we'll take up 431 first. In 1982, the full cost of care statute came under consideration because of the disparity of rates charged to the state by residential facilities. And at that time, providers of care were not in agreement over a system of payment to be used. The conference committee on House Bill 357 suspended the statute until 1984 and charged the department of providers to form a study group to consider the issue and come back to us this year with proposed legislation. The Residential Rate Commission study is in the packet of which Senate. This bill is the product of the study group and has been agreed to by the providers. Bill, as I inform, will provide for grants to local governments or nonprofit corporations for up to a three-year period with yearly cost of living adjustments. The grants are exempt from the competitive bidding procedures. Written notice of services to be purchased shall include the region to be served, the number of beds, and an estimate of days of care. Facilities must be licensed if required by the department, and they must adopt accounting procedures acceptable to the department and demonstrate actual cost of care and furnish information and records to the department and legislative department. Under the bill, grant monies will not be used to pay for lobbying and fundraising activities, capital improvements, major equipment other than depreciation, education duplicating the public school system, religious training, services that are substandard or in the alternative which exceed department requirements, and the costs funded by other government sources. The bill provides for transition grants, and the effective dates are contingent on the adoption of regulations, which I'm just advised is a probably unconstitutional procedure. There are, in addition to that constitutional question, some drafting problems, according to the Legislative Affairs Agency, which will prevent our completion of action today. And with that, Mr. Price, please proceed.
Okay, thank you. As you already stated, we were in the past, but in fact presently, the way we reimburse for private institutional care is through a formula called full cost of care. Instead of utilizing this formula, full cost of care, we're proposing a new method of reimbursing private institutional care providers, a grant process. And as you all may recall, for a number of years, the legislature has been seriously concerned about the inability of our agency to control the cost of the private institutional care budget. And 2 years ago, put a cap on the budget, basically, except for small cost of living increase, and asked that the Department of Health and Social Services establish a task force to explore alternate methods of paying for private institutional care. And basically, cost of care is an accounting formula. Rather complex accounting formula that we would then we'd gather statistics, financial statistics, analyze them based upon some reporting that we require, and we would then reimburse the institution for the following year based upon these costs. Basically, what we do is when a child is placed in a private institution, that we pay a daily fee, our daily cost. Now, what we're talking about is going to a different system, and that is a system in which we, instead of purchasing care for a particular child, we purchase through a grant process care, or actually beds. We specify the number of beds, their geographic location, as well as specify the level of professional care the children should be receiving. And the association was a part, that is the Private Care Association, was part of developing this proposal and concur with it. We have a representative today who I'm sure will be presenting the association's viewpoint. But we believe this is a good compromise and one that will ensure that there's adequate funds for the appropriate care for children, at the same time allowing our agency and the legislature to maintain budget control. What I'd like to do here is just, I don't know if you all have the report that we submitted. I see some of you do here. I could just pass a copy down to you here. And also, I'd like to share with you some other statistics that we have. What we have here is a graph, and I'd like to have you turn to actually the second page first. And what it shows here is the climbing cost of institutional care. And you'll notice on the second page here, the top graph compares institutional care with foster care. You'll notice that the bottom line is the foster care line, and you'll see a very slow rise in cost. If you look at the top line, you'll see a rather sharp cost. For instance, in 83, our cost per day for private institutional care was an average of $116 a day versus an average cost for foster care of $16.96. Now, let me be very clear that we're talking about different levels of care here. But what we see here is a real radical change in the cost of providing private institutional care in the state. As a matter of fact, the average cost this year for FY4 is $122 a day. And if you would refer to the first page now, you will see that in 1978, the average cost in 1978 per day was $50 per day, and that it has increased, like I say, from 1984 to $122 a day. And these show significant costs that that have accelerated over the years. They've accelerated beyond the inflation rate significantly. And it was our agency's view that the formula could be manipulated in such a way to pass significant costs onto the state. If I could discuss the last page, you'll notice that as a policy, we have this last page deals with the number of full-time equivalents, or number of children in foster care versus the number of children in institutional care. If you look at the bottom line, you'll notice that we've made a significant effort to reduce the number of children in institutional care. And you will notice, as you look at the top line, for instance, this year, our total FTEs for institutional care is 227. And if you will look at the top line, you'll notice that we've made an effort to emphasize foster care. And you see the sharp rise in foster care. So this agency is making every effort to maintain within our budget limits, and to find alternate types of care to utilize where appropriate. And let me be very clear that we're not placing any child in foster care that appropriately belongs in institutional care. We're simply screening and carefully evaluating each child that we place in institutional care today. What I'd like to suggest is that this piece of legislation that's being presented here will allow the state to continue to purchase the appropriate amount of institutional care, and will ensure that we have the beds available and the care available that we need for these children.
I tried to figure this out and calculated that 227 occupants at $40,150 a year. The cost was $9,191,150,
which is right. And the reason for that is that we have other costs associated with institutional care. And those other costs are like medical care, transportation, clothing, other needs that children may have.
Okay, can
and
you
that describes discussing.
Pardon me, could you explain to me if this bill were law January 1st, what happens next?
Well,
what would happen?
Yes.
If I assume that I'm running a facility, what do I do to get my money?
Okay, what will happen is that first we will establish new regulations and implement this. Secondly, what we will do is go out with RFPs for a grant process. We will specify the number of beds, the geographic location, and the level of care that we require. And then the agencies will submit their grant proposals and be evaluated just like any other grant. Yeah, the main point I want to make is that it will be a period of time to implement those, to develop those regulations,
the transition.
And then we have a phase in their transition phase.
Okay, but now let's say we're fully operative and I have 30 beds.
That's right.
Do I bid for the services? Is that part of the grant? Is it, you say it's not a competitive bid process, but how do I...
Well, it's a granting process.
Yeah. What is the mechanism for determining how many dollars of reimbursement I get?
Well, see, the grant will... You'll be awarded a grant, and that will be your grant for a year. And that will be your total bundle of dollars that you'll receive.
But what is that a factor of? The number of beds I have, or my... Your estimate as to what a proper level of cost in that family would be?
One of the things the department will do will be to try to determine, based on current placement patterns and any other needs that aren't being met by current facilities, what the needs are. We will say that, say, in June, we need so many beds in our community, and facilities will submit their proposal.
Now I'm in Anchorage and you have a need for 200 beds in Anchorage, and I've got 30. What forms do I fill out? I'm sorry to ask this question.
No, it's an appropriate question.
How do I get in, how do I tell my accountant what this is going to mean to me? How do I figure that out?
Well, basically, you would cost out what your and then from that point on, you'll know how many beds you can count on to that year. One of the problems with the current system is that with kids coming in and out of care, facilities cannot budget for the full year and know that they're going to be able to keep their staff. And of course, one of the things this bill does is create a level of continuity for providers present for a lot of them.
Because I can be assured that as long as I do a reasonable job, that you will place. You will either place them or pay me.
That's right, and that's the key point here, is that we are purchasing beds.
Yeah.
So this will enable the providers to staff their program appropriately, to manage your program in such a way so that they can pull down costs and at the same time provide a high quality of care.
You also somewhat reduce the incentive for an institution to keep someone who doesn't belong to us. But I come in with my 30 beds and I say that give me a 3-year contract and I have a kind of vacancy factor in mind, vacancy turnover factor in mind, and I will do this meeting your criteria for $80 a day. Senator Halford up in Eagle River has his own 30-bed place. and he says he will do it for $84 a day. Is this a competitive bidding situation in reality, or why is it not a competitive bidding situation?
We're not looking at it necessarily in that way. We have a contractor that will be analyzing our present placement system. That is, who are the children we have in care? What kinds of services they need? Are those service needs being presently met? We're looking at it also in geographic terms. And we're analyzing the present system so we have information. This information will allow us then to write the RFPs in such a way that we will be purchasing beds, and more importantly, the level of service that we require. I think cost is only one of many factors that we're looking at. Obviously, we're going to look at factors such as the quality of care, professionalism of the organization, and costs are only one of the factors that we can be looking at.
Are there other questions over there? Thank you. Mr. Green has been on the witness list and is not here. Let's have a go. Are there other persons desiring to hear? Yes.
Dear Wilson, did you receive a question? I understood you correctly. I've got the last year's in the
They're drafting errors that we'll have to correct. In Section 2, the repealing section of the bill would actually repeal parts of the bill that are put in later on. And also in Section 10, the effective date of the bill is dependent upon the regulations being adopted by the department, and we're informed that that's unconstitutional, and we'll have to come up with a specific date or something.
Yes,
just a day would be best.
I'm speaking for the general receiving room, and I was involved in the committee that helped draft this bill. You want to ask your endorsement of the bill? Since the freeze, most of the state's child care facility has been put on hold, and we'd like to start running again and moving forward. And I think, although this bill or this idea isn't the best thing since sliced bread, it's better than for most facilities than the situation that we had before. If this bill were not to be passed, then many of the outlying areas, facilities in the outlying areas, will be permanently down at the bottom of the ladder and unable to enhance their programs. With this bill and with granting procedures, it will give the opportunity for outlying area facilities to provide more services. And beef up their programs. An example, SIPCA at $40 a day, if full cost of care would be reenacted after this year, then they would still be at $40 a day, essentially. And I see this being very, very damaging, that there's a tremendous disproportional amount of revenues going to the different facilities in the different areas.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm John Cube, Deputy Commissioner of the Department, and I'd like to just make my testimony brief, but I was chairman of the great payment rate study committee, and I would like to at least let the senators know that the committee, one of the major points that Senator Park had when he suspended, agreed for suspension of the bill and worked in a compromise to set up the committee, that he wanted to be sure that the residential care providers had an opportunity to participate in the payment rate study committee, and that they had an opportunity, all of the providers had an opportunity to put in their, what they felt was needed in terms of changes and what kinds of the things that they felt would make a viable program for the future. And I wanted to assure the committee that not only did we have two providers on the committee, but on two separate occasions we met with the entire provider community to discuss the developments in the rate study committee. We met once in the spring of 83, and then we met again just about 6 weeks ago with the provider, 4 weeks ago, with the provider community to go over the bill, and the provider community had an opportunity to make some recommendations for changes at that point in time. I think that that was a significant piece of, an important piece of the whole study committee, was to have that kind of dialogue and have individuals able to respond. The other thing that we did to keep the providers involved was we sent minutes out after each and every meeting to every provider in the state, including all the backup materials, asking if they had any questions or if they wanted to respond to something. As the committee was working, to please let the committee know what their concerns were about where we were headed.
Now, is your product here modeled after other states' products?
The majority of states in the United States have either contracting statutes or granting statutes for this type of care. Alaska is the only state that had a purchase statute similar to the one that we presently have. And at the time when Senator Chance put before the legislature that statute, it was considered to be a very model statute in the sense that it would protect for an ongoing period the amounts of dollars that would be going into residential care. And in fact, it did do that. The increases in residential care were significant over the years, because 47 portions in place. But because of the construction of the legislation, I think there were some areas that developed, particularly to what Mr. Bolts has testified to, the disproportionate share going into certain areas versus other areas of the state, and the inability of the executive branch to modify that without a change in the legislation. This legislation is modeled after a number of other bills around the country.
All right. I think we have some drafting consideration, and the members will no doubt want to review the report, so we'll suspend our action at this time and revert to it next week. We will not be meeting Monday, so at what time do you think? We can come back to this a week from today.
A week from today. We can talk to
you. We'll move on to Senator 519. Related to the state support for education. And this is a simple matter. We waived the 5-day rule on this because last year the legislative intent was to freeze the foundation formula pending a study that is now being completed by the Department of Education, now being undertaken. And the freeze order was only for 1984, FY 1984, and we learn now that the study will not be completed until December of this year. The intent of the bill is to continue the foundation freeze for FY 85 with continuing CPI adjustments for the year to the average daily membership used to compute the amount of state aid to each district. And I think that Senator Sackett thought that there might be an oversight here because of the year's delay that should be cured by enactment. Mr. Thompson, do you want to speak?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is correct, your observations that Senator Sackett made on an oversight. Basically, Section 10 of that act that passed last year is quite confusing as to what exactly the department is supposed to do. And in the current year, 84, we can make adjustments depending upon the information as to student enrollment submitted by the district scale in the first quarter. This isn't spoken to in 85 as to what we should do. Therefore, whatever we would do, we would envision no action. Being served by a number of lawsuits by school districts. If we did nothing, that is, we would not be able to compensate districts for enrollment increases from the first quarter of this year through the end of FY85. And we'd anticipate that they would feel they'd be treated improperly. If we did make adjustments to compensate, those districts that may have drops in enrollment would sue us on the basis of we have no authority to do so. And therefore, we sort of passed to a never-never land
as to what to do. The Deputy Attorney General did point out to us that in Section 10, the only place that the term basic state aid is used, which reverts back to the foundation program that was suspended, which would obviously cost, it's a more cost. So for those reasons, we strongly support this.
So it isn't a matter, there would still be continuing authority to fund the districts.
Yes.
Because the old laws are merely suspended until June 30.
Yes, there is a question based on what we find in Section 10 of the current statute as to whether we revert to the old programs, the old schedules as of July 1.
Well, assuming you would know, what is wrong with that? The fact that you can't make the right adjustments under the old system?
We can make them. We would revert to the old system. The cost would be, we have a budget amendment right now based on CPI. That brings the cost of the program up to about $493 million. We estimate, putting back the old program, the cost between $550 and $520
million. Senator Morrison?
Basically, all we're doing here is just to limit back the sunset this year and carry on next year. It's not going to cost any money.
It does mean that we can administer programs.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Cooksey with NEA Alaska. First, might indicate that I do support the CPI concept. We promoted that several years ago to plug it into the foundation program. However, in terms of the formula versus the dollar per student approach, as I indicated last year when we went this route, we feel that is a disadvantage to the special ed, the voc ed, the bilingual type folks. Because the fact is, with this arrangement, there's a reward for decertifying those kids, as I see it. Because the dollar per kid was based on the assumption that they wouldn't have this program. Same thing with junior high programs. We also would encourage you to plug in a floor in this funding at effective in the first quarter. And particularly if the enrollment goes down, especially in a smaller place, then the staffing, for instance, or the other commitments they've made, they may have a tough time delivering on, tough time funding them if the enrollment drops significantly. So at least at one time in the foundation program, we had a floor at the end of the first quarter. If the enrollments went up, they got the additional money. But if the enrollment went down significantly, they didn't lose the money during that year. It did affect the next year. Another thing, by continuing this program but extending it for next year, we still aren't dealing with the forward funding concept, which leaves all those districts behind the eight ball on budgeting for the following year. So right now we're trying to determine funds for the coming school year, and the budget process should be mostly over. They should be getting ready to submit those budgets to the various assemblies by first paper. So that, those are my comments.
What's the alternative?
Well, as I said, if you have to put on, well, for one, by merely not extending the suspension, if you don't extend the suspension, then you're back to the formula. And as Bill indicated earlier, that does mean more money to those districts. Secondly, in terms of the forward funding concept, you could plug that one in either with the formula or with the bill you have now. It's an additional section which says the CPI concept will also apply to FY86.
But I'm wondering if this is really, I mean, I have problems with this because it seems to me that that's the next session's job. And we've all been waiting on this report, and I'm kind of reflecting to you that I don't see a disposition in the legislature to do very much with this, to be perfectly frank. Until there is a report that says we should break new ground.
I kind of share your concerns, and as a matter of fact, I see practically that that's probably what's going to happen, nothing more than extending this thing for 1 year. But I do feel that these problems are there and will exist, and that I believe it's the legislature's wisdom as to whether or not they need to deal with it. But that study isn't going to deal with the funding for FY86. It's going to be behind it, that funding curve. And if the people running the show are satisfied with it, I'll have to live with it. But it's a reality.
Well, the effect of not extending will mean an obligation of the legislature to add more money to the budget for school operations on state supported school operations. And Mr. Thompson, what would be the dollar figures?
We are running those numbers, and we estimate between $550 and $520 million total, which would be roughly $25, $27 million.
Do you have a... Do you have a breakout as to which districts that would affect? I mean, I'm sure you do. You have your computations would tell us.
Yes.
We have not had any districts asking us not to suspend the program or to revert back to the other program. I mean, that's that problem.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not really asking you to hold the bill up because of the comments I made here, but they are problems that I see.
If we pass this bill along to finance in its present form, would you regard us as negligent and careless and disregardful of your testimony, or would you regard that as a reasonably responsible thing to do on March 9th?
I suspect I'd regard it as a legislative reality.
Thank you. Mr. Green?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bob Green, and I represent school boards. I get a little nervous about coming back to the legislature and asking for things when we have made a deal. We asked the legislature last year to support a moratorium and the foundation support. And the legislature, in its wisdom, did set a rate of funding. That's a whole other aside, but to get the commercial in the plug, I urge the legislature to fund that amount. But we're not making, at least school boards are not making any new requests. The intent of this piece of legislation is specifically merely to correct a technicality that prohibits the department from making the final adjustment on the second year. We would not even be asking for that legislation unless it was deemed by the legal folks to be unnecessary. We need a process. And that process, this was kind of overlooked, as you may recall, the bill, House Bill 251 of last year, started out to be a one-year bill in the House. And then in the Senate, as time and investigation proved that it was probable that we would need for 2 years, the second factor was added in the Senate. We just missed a step. We forgot to put on that final part where the department has the authority to make that adjustment. And that's all we're asking for. And I guess I would be really strongly opposed, not because I don't think education can use more money, but I also like to honor the fact that we did make an arrangement last year, and it's tough to come back and in the middle of the stream and change that.
No matter how bad it was.
I think in the long run, it's probably better to treat this as a technical matter, because I could see us trying to make some interim changes, which we might not succeed in doing anyway, and then when we really have meat and potatoes to offer, form of a report, there'll be a burnout factor here, and we'll have the fatigue of, gee, we looked at this in 83 and 84, and now it's back on us again. And I think probably better take a fresh run at it.
That would be our recommendation, too, Senator. I don't think it's, and I guess from my sense of political realities, if that door is open, we have political chaos on our hands, because there's a lot of political sentiment to leave it the way it is, and there's some sentiment to change it. And we all recognize that the goal is to have a new bill ready for the next session.
Not only that, if it's an open question, you might find people who want to roll it back, because we're all looking for money for sitting in and maybe capital projects and not all this. Okay, thank you. What's the committee's pleasure on SB
500? Last year I didn't like it in the first place, and I hollered about it, but we're in the middle of it, so we might as well continue it on for a while.
Objection to the motion? We'll report the bill. The chair will sign the pass. And thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.